Well, our Bible reading today is taken from Matthew chapter 24. Matthew chapter 24, this is the next installment as we work our way through this gospel record. We're going to take up a reading at the beginning of this chapter, Matthew chapter 24. Jesus left the temple and was walking away when his disciples came to him to call his attention to its buildings. "Do you see these things?" he asked. "Truly I tell you, not one stone here will be left on another. Every one will be thrown down." As Jesus was sitting on the Mount of Olives, the disciples came to him privately. "Tell us," they said, "when will this happen? And what will be the sign of your coming and of the end of the age?" Jesus answered, "Watch out that no one deceives you. For many will come in my name, claiming, 'I am the Messiah,' and will deceive many. You will hear of wars and rumors of wars, but see to it that you are not alarmed. Such things must happen, but the end is still to come. Nation will rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom. There will be famines and earthquakes in various places. All these are the beginning of birth pains. Then you will be handed over to be persecuted and be put to death. And you will be hated by all nations because of me. At that time, many will turn away from the faith and will betray and hate each other with many false prophets, and many false prophets will appear and deceive many people. Because of the increase of wickedness, the love of most will grow cold. But the one who stands firm to the end will be saved. And this gospel of the kingdom will be preached in the whole world as a testimony to all nations, and then the end will come. So when you see standing in the holy place the abomination that causes desolation, spoken of through the prophet Daniel, let the reader understand. Then let those who are in Judea flee to the mountains. Let no one on the housetop go down to take anything out of the house. Let no one in the field go back to get their cloak. How dreadful it will be in those days for pregnant women and nursing mothers. Pray that your flight will not take place in winter or on the Sabbath, for then there will be great distress, unequaled from the beginning of the world until now, and never to be equaled again. If those days had not been cut short, no one would survive. But for the sake of the elect, those days will be shortened. At that time, if anyone says to you, 'Look, here is the Messiah,' or 'There he is,' do not believe it. For false messiahs and false prophets will appear and perform great signs and wonders to deceive, if possible, even the elect. See, I've told you ahead of time. So if anyone tells you, 'There he is out in the wilderness,' do not go out. Or, 'Here he is in the inner rooms,' do not believe it. For as lightning that comes from the east is visible even in the west, so will be the coming of the Son of Man. Wherever there is a carcass, there the vultures will gather. Immediately after the distress of those days, the sun will be darkened and the moon will not give its light. The stars will fall from the sky and the heavenly bodies will be shaken. Then will appear the sign of the Son of Man in heaven. And then all the peoples of the earth will mourn when they see the Son of Man coming on the clouds of heaven with power and great glory. And he will send his angels with a loud trumpet call, and they will gather his elect from the four winds, from one end of the heavens to the other. Now learn this lesson from the fig tree. As soon as its twigs get tender and its leaves come out, you know that summer is near. Even so, when you see all these things, you know that it is near, right at the door. Truly I tell you, this generation will certainly not pass away until all these things have happened. Heaven and earth will pass away, but my words will never pass away. But about that day or hour, no one knows, not even the angels in heaven nor the Son, but only the Father. As it was in the days of Noah, so it'll be in the days of the Son of Man. For in the days before the flood, people were eating and drinking, marrying and giving in marriage, up to the day Noah entered the ark. And they knew nothing about what would happen until the flood came and took them all away. That is how it will be at the coming of the Son of Man. Two men will be in the field, one will be taken and the other left. Two women will be grinding with a handmill, one will be taken and the other left. Therefore keep watch, because you do not know on what day your Lord will come. But understand this, If the owner of the house had known at what time of night the thief was coming, he would have kept watch and would not have let his house be broken into. So you also must be ready, because the Son of Man will come at an hour when you do not expect him. Who then is the faithful and wise servant whom the master has put in charge of the servants in his household to give them their food at the proper time? It will be good for that servant whose master finds him doing so when he returns. Truly I tell you, he will put him in charge of all his possessions. But suppose that servant is wicked and says to himself, my master is staying away a long time. And then he begins to beat his fellow servants and to eat and drink with drunkards. The master of that servant will come on a day when he does not expect him, and at an hour he is not aware of. He will cut him to pieces and assign him a place with the hypocrites, where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. We're going to leave our reading there for the moment, and we'll return to it later in our service. Please do take your Bibles if you have them. Open them at Matthew chapter 24. Keep them open at chapter 24. This is where we will be studying today. As I was mulling over the preparation for what to say about this final block of concentrated teaching that Jesus gives in the Gospel of Matthew, I ended up, through one link and another, on a website called The Rapture Index. And this website, the Rapture Index, has 45 different categories, including things like crime and leadership issues, the occult, people claiming to be Jesus, and a whole host of others. 45 categories that they score, and that they come up with a number at the end of their scoring system, this number that can fluctuate, but the number will be indicative as to whether or not Jesus is coming back anytime soon. So having wasted a few minutes of my life that I'm never going to get back on this website, the number for that day turned out to be 188. And there's a little key on the website that helps us to understand the numbers. And the key said, anything over 160, then fasten your seatbelts, because Jesus is coming. Why do I mention a website like that? Well, for two reasons. First of all, it is so misleading. Jesus is crystal clear in this chapter that nobody knows the day of his return. Nobody's going to predict it. Nobody's going to second guess it. His return is a reserved matter, and it is reserved for his Father in heaven. So it's misleading to suggest on the Rapture Index that it's time to fasten our seatbelts. But the second reason I mention it is that even though Jesus is crystal clear, that hasn't stopped people over the years from declaring with such certainty that the end of the world, as Jesus returns, is going to happen on this particular date or on that particular date. And of course, these dates come and go and the world is still spinning. You and I are still here, but they continue to try and figure out when Jesus is coming back. Some people through history have gone even further. There was a guy back in Australia in the day, and he helped construct this outdoor theatre. And he would sell tickets for seats in this outdoor theatre at huge prices so that people could witness the arrival of Jesus. He took the words from verse 27, for as the lightning comes from the east is visible in the west. He decided that Jesus is going to come from the east, that's Australia, so let's build this theatre, sell some tickets, watch Jesus come back. And people were so gullible that they actually did buy these tickets. And so the whole return of Jesus, stroke end of the world, it generates an awful lot of heat. Today, what I want us to do is to shed some light on that whole area by thinking about what Jesus teaches us in chapter 24. And to begin with, I want to think of the two events that chapter 24 speaks of. These two events that in the minds of the disciples are very close together. But as Jesus teaches us, as you change the angle, as you look at these events, they're actually thousands of years apart. These two events are the destruction of the temple, which Jesus speaks about, the destruction of the only place on earth that the people of God in that day could go and meet with God. Jesus says not one stone is going to be left on another. And the second event in the disciples' minds is the return of Jesus. For them, these events are close. growing up as I did in the Hebrides on the occasional good day that we had with the right light, you could see across the Minch and you could see the distinctive shapes of the hills of the West Coast. You could spot Sullivan, you could spot Stacpollion, and from my perspective, looking on the other side of the Minch, they're all so close together. Now, in reality, they're miles apart, aren't they? But from one perspective, they appeared so close. For the disciples, in their minds, the events of the destruction of the temple and the return of Jesus are really close. And Jesus asks their questions about the future of these two events. But as he answers, we realize that just as there's miles between Stacpollion and Sullivan and other hills, there are thousands of years between the destruction of the temple and the return of Jesus Christ. In the run-up to the first one of these events, this first destruction of the temple, as it were, Jesus lists from verse 4 onwards a number of things that will take place. Whether it is false teachers, whether it is wars, whether it's famines, whether it's persecution, Jesus lists a whole host of things right down to verse 14, where the gospel was going to be preached in the whole world. And then Jesus goes on to say in verse 34, "Truly I tell you, this generation will not pass away until all these things have happened." Because what Jesus lists in these verses from verse 4 onwards are things that took place in the 40 years or so between Jesus speaking about the destruction of the temple and the actual destruction that took place in AD 70 when the Romans destroyed Jerusalem. All these things took place in that generation. You say, but hold on, Alistair. Hold on. You say that the gospel has been preached in the whole world? Well, yes, if we understand the world in biblical terms. Do you remember when Jesus, after he rose from the dead, he spoke to the disciples and he said to them in Acts chapter 1, "You're going to be my witnesses in Jerusalem and Judea and in Samaria and to the ends of the earth." He's talking about their witness to the Gentile peoples who inhabit the rest of the world. That witness to the Gentile peoples occurred in that 40 years, as did the other things mentioned there. Now, here's what I think where we get slightly confused. It's not that the habitat, the environment that these early Christians lived in for that 40 years, these were precursors, signs to what was going to happen before the temple would be destroyed. But these events would continue to be the environment in which God's people would live until Jesus comes back. So when we read a chapter like this and we read about these things that are taking place, they were signs in the run-up to the temple being destroyed. They also happen to be the environment, the habitat that we continue to live in. Because we continue to live with false teaching. We continue to live with wars and rumors of war. We continue to live with persecution. All these things, that is the lot of the people of God before the temple would be destroyed and since. And so they're not, in that sense, signs of the end of the world now. Nor are other things that we might think of. Let me take you back to 2014 and 2016 and the referendums of independence and Brexit. And the reactions to the results of these referendums were quite extreme at the time. And it's the end of the world. Some people would be crying out. They'd be writing on their social media outlets and in other articles. It's the end of the world because their hopes were pinned on a different outcome. Well, it's not the end of the world. Because the Bible is absolutely clear that the world will come to an end. That is certain. One day will be the last. And on that day, whatever plans had been made for the subsequent day by individuals or by governments, these plans are not going to come to fruition. Because it will be the last. But the end of the world will come, and it'll not be dependent upon any political, economic, educational, or social landscape issues. It will come to a conclusion with the arrival of the Son of Man. Verse 37 talks about the coming of the Son of Man, Jesus' favorite way of expressing who he is, his identity. The end of the world will arrive with the coming of the Son of Man. And just as his birth and his upbringing and his impact and his betrayal, his arrest, his crucifixion, his resurrection was promised, prophesied, predicted, and came true, so the promise of his return will come true as well. The issue is, we're not going to get a warning beforehand, though. Where this first mountain, if you like, in the vista of the disciples was of the destruction of the temple, there's going to be all these signs leading up to it. For the return of Jesus, it's going to be unexpected. None of us are going to predict it. You know, some people reach a stage where, having accrued so many scars through the experiences of life, will turn around and say, there is nothing that can surprise me anymore in life. Well, there's definitely one thing, and that will be the return of Jesus. That will surprise you. It'll surprise me. It'll surprise everyone who's alive at that point. Because Jesus goes on in this passage in verse 43 to say that his surprise is going to be as surprising as if you were going to be burgled. As surprising as the behavior of a thief, because I'm pretty sure that the thieves back in Jesus' day were no different to the thieves in our day. But no thief in our day phones up and says, well, you know, if you wouldn't mind, it would help an awful lot if you would leave the downstairs bathroom window open on the evening of the 22nd, because I'm planning on making a call. Well, if they did something as stupid as that, we'd make sure we'd go round to our neighbours and find the fiercest, loudest barking dog that we would have in the house. We'd have the police number ready to press dial once they came. We'd be ready, wouldn't we? We'd be prepared. Nobody's just going to allow their house to be burgled. Unless they're after insurance, but that's a different story entirely. But ordinarily, nobody allows their house to be burgled, do they? Because if they thought it was going to happen, they'd prepare for it. And Jesus says, the end of the world will come with the arrival of the Son of Man. When is not really the question. The question is, how do we live with the prospect of this surprising, unexpected return? And that's where the teaching of chapter 24 comes into its own. It's not when is Jesus coming back, but how do we live with the promise of his unexpected return? Let me direct you to three things from this passage. First of all, we are preparing for his return by being alert. By being alert. There's one word that keeps appearing in the first half of this chapter in different forms, and it is the word deception. There will be people who will come to deceive you. They will deceive you. They will deceive many. They will perform great signs and wonders, says Jesus in verse 24, to deceive, if possible, even the elect. There's going to be things happening here that you need to be alert to so that you don't fall into the trap of listening to what individuals are saying. Now, this whole idea of being deceived, I suppose every generation has its own way of understanding it. From our generation, think of fake news. The whole epidemic of fake news that we have in our generation. Where does one go to actually find out the truth that doesn't have any slant put onto it, or any twist, or any spin? It's very difficult to find out the truth of a subject because of the world that we're living in. What Jesus says is that on a spiritual level, there's going to be fake news. And he's right. Because today, people could log on to church services and they could turn up in person to various different places and they will hear a fake, false message from the Bible. They won't hear the message of the Bible that humanity as a whole, which means each individual who makes up the human race, is guilty before God of having rejected and ignored God and the world he's created, primarily guilty of rejecting his Son. They're not going to hear that the only way to deal with that, the weight of that guilt that's upon us, is to cry out for mercy and plead for forgiveness on the basis of who Jesus is and of what Jesus has done. There will be many outlets today that come under the bracket or the terminology of the Christian church that are actually delivering fake news. They will actually be deceiving people. And they will be deceiving people in different ways. But Jesus says there will be people through the years who will deceive not simply in the message, but they will deceive by way of who the messengers are. There will be crazy people who will come along and claim to be the Messiah. And various crazy people throughout history have done that. And they will deceive, even if possible, by performing signs and wonders, performing miracles. And Jesus is saying, we need to be alert. We need to be alert in the fact that there's not going to be a single biblical voice that we're going to hear. There's going to be other voices trying to distort that. And if we're going to be prepared and ready for the surprising return of our Savior, then we need to grab a hold and keep a hold of the promises of God in context. And somehow learn to memorize them. And somehow learn to live by them and keep a hold of them. Because the possibility of being deceived is significant. Why? Because Jesus also goes on to say that there's going to be other things that are going to happen. You know, nation are going to rise against nation. It's going to be international hostility, as well as natural disasters. And the circumstances in which God's people are going to live in the run-up to the temple being destroyed, and from that point until Jesus comes back, it's not going to be easy. And the circumstances of life will become so difficult that in many ways, what we will want above everything else is for Jesus to come back and to take us home. And if you've had a particularly trying time of late, maybe the past few days, weeks, months, who knows, and when the confusion and the hurts and the burdens of life become almost crushing, doesn't the prospect of heaven become even more precious? Doesn't the prospect of Jesus coming become even more precious? And then you hear things, you know, well, maybe this is what's going to happen. And Jesus is saying, no, be alert. Don't be deceived. Don't be deceived by messengers, their message, or their miracles. Because if there's any deviation from what the Bible teaches, if there's any deviation, Jesus says, from what I'm teaching you, you're going to be deceived. Don't be deceived. That's our first way of preparing. And building on that, Jesus says, be realistic. Or don't despair. And what we're thinking there is, in particular, is of the words from verse 9 onwards, where it talks about persecution, where it talks about God's people experiencing what Jesus experienced. Jesus was not welcomed. He came into a world that was dark, and his light was rejected. And in a world that continues to be dark, the light that Christians bring is not going to be welcomed. We're not going to be welcomed. Our Savior's not going to be welcomed. His message isn't going to be welcomed. And so Jesus is very clear. He's telling us ahead of time that there are people who are going to try and deceive us. He's telling us ahead of time. He's telling us ahead of time that life's going to be difficult through international hostility, man's inhumanity to man, natural disasters, pandemics. He's telling us life's going to be difficult. He's telling us ahead of time. He's warning us. He's warning us also ahead of time that persecution is going to be the lot of God's people, not simply up until the temple being destroyed, but even since then and from then. And we could speak today, we could take up our whole time talking about what's going on with Christians in India, and what's going on with blasphemy laws being used against Christians in Pakistan. We could be exploring more about Central Asia, the place that we were praying about earlier on today. We could be talking about persecution because it's real. Jesus warned us and it's real. And he's warning us even today so that we realize that what we think is far away is actually coming closer. In the West, for many decades, Christians were classed as just rather odd individuals. You know, they're kind of a bit crankish, aren't we? And we were kind of dismissed, lightly dismissed, as being little kind of cranks. Well, the culture's changing in the West significantly because we're no longer cranks. Watch this space as Christians become more dangerous. Viewed as dangerous, not because of our actions, but because we actually stand by what the Bible teaches us about gender, about sexuality, about some of the really explosive topics of the day. The time of Christians being dismissed as being cranks in the West, that's actually coming to an end. We're now viewed as more dangerous, and we'll be dealt with in that way. And when we are, we remind ourselves that's what Jesus said. And so we're not to despair. We're to be realistic, but we're not to despair. Why? Because in some ways, Christians should be the calmest of all people. Because Jesus has told us what's unfolding, and it's unfolding exactly as he said. His word is true. We can depend upon that word. And because his word is true, his word has reminded us that it doesn't matter what may happen, tribulation or trouble, nothing's going to separate us from his love. Nothing. And so we read that in the context of Romans chapter 8, but back in the Old Testament, think of Psalm 27, which encapsulates this truth. The Lord is my light and my salvation. Whom shall I fear? The Lord is a stronghold of my life. Of whom shall I be afraid? Though an army besiege me, my heart will not fear. Though a war break out against me, even then I'll be confident. Why? Because we can face the future, the chaos, the disorder, with a sense of calm, knowing that we are secure in Jesus Christ, just as he warned us. His return is going to be unexpected. It's going to be a shock. We prepare for his return by not being deceived, but by being alert. We prepare for his return not by despairing, but by being realistic. His word is true. And we prepare for his return, finally, by recognizing that distraction is a real possibility. If you think back to March of last year, the opening days of March last year were just normal, weren't they? You were working, you had your routines, whatever that might be, and they had the opportunity to go and meet together, gather together with folks, perhaps do a bit of travelling, go out for a meal. And then all of a sudden it stopped. Lockdown was announced and we were stuck at home and things were very, very different. And we had perhaps an inkling that it was coming. We saw what was happening in other parts of Europe at the time. We thought, well, is it going to come here or not? And then it did. Lockdown. The people in Noah's day, says Jesus in the second half of this chapter, the people in Noah's day saw Noah building this vessel. They heard Noah talking about why he's building this vessel. But for them, the ordinary routine of daily life, as well as the special events of life, as Jesus describes it there, people were eating and drinking, well, that's just normal. Marrying and giving in marriage, well, that's a special events of life. They were so consumed by the ordinary and by the special that what was happening in front of their eyes didn't really register. There may be a huge vessel getting built. They may think the guy who's building is a bit odd. But it didn't register for them. And then the flood came. Out of nowhere, the flood came. I suppose in one sense, our generation, given the fact we've had lockdown, we've had a degree of an insight as to what's going to happen when life stops. Obviously not the full extent of what life happens when life stops. This is a little trailer. It's a little taste that life will stop. And things we had planned for tomorrow, it's not going to happen. Things you had planned for next month, it's not going to happen. Jesus says here that it is possible for us to be like the people in Noah. So absorbed by what's going on in life. So taken up with the routine, with the busyness, with the challenges, that we are completely distracted. And his return, we are not waiting for. And I hear you if you're there thinking, well, listen, life is busy. You've no idea what kind of life I've had even the past few days. It's not been 40 hours a week. It's been 60 hours a week and more. There's stuff going on at home. There's stuff going on at work. I barely know what I'm doing.
I can hardly kind of navigate the chaos that I'm currently going through. I don't have the headspace to think about the return of Jesus. And I understand life, there are seasons and times of life that are horrendously busy. And Jesus understands that too, because he's lived here. But if that is our life, if our life is absorbed with a 50, 60 hours of work and the chaos in which we're living, so that we have got no slack to be able to remind ourselves that on any given morning, this might be the day that Jesus comes back, then we are going to be unprepared. We're going to be so distracted, we are unprepared. What does preparation look like? Well, in any sermons you've probably heard over the years, if any of you've been in church over a period of time, and the end of the world has been spoken of, you'd have heard of the guy John Wesley. This guy was one of the great preachers of history. He travelled thousands of miles every single year, on horseback as well as on foot, telling people about who Jesus is. And he was asked one day, what would he do if he knew that the Lord was coming back? There's two versions of the story. Coming back either that night or the following Tuesday. The answer is the same, irrespective of which kind of version you've heard. Because he said, I should continue to do everything exactly as I'm doing. I should continue to do exactly what I'm doing, rather. That's the exact quote. I should continue, if the Lord's coming back tonight or next Tuesday, I should continue to do exactly what I'm doing. Now, the interesting thing about that is that there's no rearrangements. There's no readjustments that have to be made. And when I think of the prospect of, if I took seriously the fact that the Lord could come back today, what readjustments would I need to make? What rearrangements would I need to make? What would you need to make? Because we need to be ready. Jesus is telling us that this second great event the disciples were focused on, there's thousands of years in between these two events, but this is coming. The end will arrive with the coming of the Son of Man. And we don't know when the full-time whistle is going to sound, or the full-time trumpet, as somebody put it. What we need is to be available for the past that's coming to us. Because we know the kickoff has started. And we know we've got a captain who's going to lead us to victory. We need to be available for the pass anytime. When the full-time trumpet sounds is not our concern. Our concern is, are we ready? Our concern today is, are you ready? Am I ready? How are we going to be ready? Be alert. Don't be deceived. Be realistic. Don't despair. Be prepared. Don't be distracted. Jesus has taught us how to be ready. Amen.